You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This September, Derek Willis, news applications developer of ProPublica, and John Keefe, WNYC senior editor for Data News, joined us to discuss some of the major issues of this election and Election Land, a joint reporting project of WNYC, ProPublica, and other news organizations. I'm pleased that they could join us again to discuss yesterday's voting. Welcome back to our show.
Hi, Leonard.
Thanks very much, Leonard.
Did you work on the Election Land project last night focused primarily on the process of voting or on the results? John?
It really, really focused on the process of voting. In fact, we sort of wound down our process once all of the voting had been completed across the country. Really what we were interested in was problems people had voting. That was what we were looking for. And we really wanted to be able to report on that in real time while the polls were still open. The idea being that if we did see problems, we could alert local reporters who could actually go to those locations and even work with local election officials to try to address those problems if we saw any.
How did the turnout compare with previous elections?
So turnout in this election, we won't have a final count, I think, until some of the outstanding absentee and provisional ballots are counted in certain states. There's a number of states where you probably have some recounts or some late counts that are still underway, like New Hampshire and North Carolina and other places that have extremely tight races, statewide races. But it looks like, overall, that it's the lowest turnout in a presidential race since about the 2000 election. So it's a little bit under, so it's under 2012 and under 2008. Levels. And
were you surprised? Because we heard from a number of supporters of both candidates that they had been motivated to vote for the first time in their lives.
Sure. And I think, the thing is, even though the overall number was down, I think one of the interesting things, and we're still trying to sort of unpack this, is that in some states turnout was up. For example, Florida had very, very strong turnout in a number of places. But in other states, the turnout didn't match the last two presidential elections. And so why that is a pretty complicated question, I suspect. But it's something that, I think we and definitely a lot of other folks are going to try to dig into and figure out.
We invite our listeners to call in and join this discussion. Give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate, talking about experiences you may have had at polling places. The number of polling places was reduced in parts of the country, even though turnout was expected to be higher. Do we know yet whether that might have affected some of those results?
It could have. It really sort of depends on a couple of factors here. In some of these locations where the number of polling places were reduced, some of those states had early voting and were expecting a high early voting turnout. And so the expectation by local officials was that would help, that would sort of reduce the number of people in line on election day. Obviously, that's not the case for states like Pennsylvania and New York that don't have early voting. There's not a real simple answer to this, but I think in places where when polling places get reduced, then I think it's something we always have to look for in terms of what the impacts of that are. And the impacts are not only in terms of long lines, but if people's polling places are either moved or the old one they went to are no longer open, you have to ask the question of whether or not they will even know where to go or be motivated enough to find where to go to vote.
The number of polling places was cut most in southern states like Alabama, North and South Carolina, Texas, also Arizona. What did those states claim was the justification for them cutting them?
In some cases it was partly early voting. But in many states, the justification was that there's a trend in some states and some officials in terms of, and it's not necessarily a completely partisan one, towards creating fewer precinct voting locations and creating more sort of larger voting centers that can hold voting sites for multiple precincts.
And then so you do, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's like a consolidation thing. So part of this is budget and resources, but part of this is political in the sense that, like, all decisions about how the vote occurs and where people vote have a political aspect to it.
And you mentioned the long lines as a result. Did some potential voters just give up and leave when they realized that they'd be waiting for a couple of hours?
We definitely saw reports of that. I mean, it's tough to tell exactly how big of an impact that had because, you know, folks who walk away don't all, you know, it's hard to know who was in line and then didn't stay in line. But we definitely saw reports of that on social media. We definitely had people who called the election protection hotline that we had access to say that they didn't either have the time or they were frustrated and left the line, maybe hoping to return, but maybe in some cases they weren't able to return.
ElectionLand used a tool called Election DataBot for rapid updates about polls, spending, searching trends, and so on. Did that show you anything interesting over the course of the voting yesterday that we might not have learned about previously?
Trying to think, if John wants to jump in here, but I will say that for web searches, what we saw were that as polling places opened across the country, what you would see is you would see a increase, and sometimes it was only a brief increase, but an increase in people searching for information about provisional ballots or what are known in New York as affidavit ballots, where you have to, fill out a paper form and sign it in order to vote. And so provisional ballots are a built-in feature of the system. Like, we know they exist, we know they happen, but it was interesting to see just how many questions people had about them, and in particular whether or not they would be counted in the same way that regular votes were. And so I think there's some education that either needs to happen, or there's some the communication issues in terms of voters not understanding what the process is and what the impacts of casting a provisional ballot might be.
Historically, New York State has experienced some of the lowest turnouts over the years, and that's been true across the state. Do you know whether that remained true yesterday?
I don't. I don't have the top of my head here, but let me take a look and see what it looked like.
I can tell you that a lot of folks in New York City did run into long lines at the polls yesterday morning, and we were looking into that. It's interesting because partly we don't know if it's because we were being so good about actually tracking and reporting on the problems that maybe we just saw them more clearly this time and that they've always been this way. But we got a lot of people saying that they'd never seen these kind of problems. And a couple of things that seemed to come up were that there were broken machines and also poll books, the ledger books that you sign, in some cases were not in the right place. And that usually gets sorted out by, mid-morning, but that's something that can really create long lines. I'm sure a lot of people listening ran into this. We know they did because they texted us. We used a texting system run by a company called Mobile Commons that allowed us to take in texted reports. And it's interesting because we had a bunch of election experts here in Election Land in the newsroom, and they were saying that New York is a unique situation where people set up, the poll workers set up just in the hour before the first voters arrive. So if there is a problem, that's not something that they see until the morning, and not maybe the night before, as happens in many other polling locations. So that's something that we were reporting out yesterday. The BOE, the Board of Elections, says they can't really secure the equipment in most of their locations overnight, so they have to set it up this way. But that seems to have been at least part of the problem.
Dina from Manhattan has called in. Hi, Dina.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it was very disappointing. First of all, when I woke up yesterday morning, I called my friend in Israel and said, should I even go and vote? I was so disappointed with both candidates. But then she said, God forbid, Trump gets in, you got to go and vote for Hillary. So I went to my normal voting precinct, which I've gone for many, 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 many years. And lo and behold, my name wasn't there. I was in shock. And they wanted to give me some ballot. I said, no. I know that I vote all the time. I haven't missed an election since I'm 18 years old, a primary or major election. And they sent me like four blocks away. And I had some business appointments I had to go to. But I made it a point, to go and vote. And I'm just like so disappointed in that. And then I'm so disappointed that I believe that this was a rigged election. And just the way Donald Trump kept saying during his campaign, oh, this is going to be rigged and blah, blah, blah. And ended up his campaign won this election. And I don't understand how he could have won it when most Americans didn't want him. I mean, it's a disgrace.
Well, was that a matter of rigging, gentlemen, or was that simply a matter of some other problem we heard where a lot of the books were sent to the wrong places? Would that have been just a typical mistake, or could that have been something that was done on purpose yesterday?
Well, it's not a typical. I mean, it's a common mistake in the sense that it happens on election. We had reports like that in other states and other locations where either equipment or poll books were either sent to the wrong place or they had, you know, not all of the information that they needed to. So it's not an uncommon thing. It's certainly not like it doesn't give you a lot of confidence, I think, as we heard. I mean, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence in the system. But I think overall, in terms of, like, the reports that we got in yesterday, and frankly, the way that elections are held, national elections are held in the United States, like, there, you know, it's very difficult to sort of structure an election the way you want it to turn out in a 50-state scenario. And so I think what we saw, and we talked to folks who are with a lot of expertise in the running of elections, what we saw yesterday was fairly typical sort of incidents for problems for people voting, and not very many of the kind of things that I think people were maybe fearing going into today, which voter intimidation at the polls, roving, bands of people acting as independent observers on behalf of a candidate, which Donald Trump had called for. And that didn't really pan out in any, sort of organized systemic way. There were sporadic reports of it, but it didn't really pan out that way.
Sticking to New York State as a state that has a low turnout, Westchester County has a turnout rate of 20 points lower than areas just across the border in Connecticut. And turnout jumps up as you cross from New York over to Massachusetts. Why is New York State turnout low when it's high in similar areas in neighboring states? Is that partly due to the fact that New York doesn't have early voting?
It may not be so much early voting in the sense that, like, early voting itself, the results are mixed in terms of how it impacts turnout. There are states that have it that have seen higher turnouts, but there are also states that have it that haven't seen any change, meaningful change in turnout. You know, part of this goes toward sort of the number and competitive nature of elections that would cause people to, may cause people to become more energized or more, make it more of a habit. And then also, like, lots of places in New York, in New York State, particularly in the New York City area, have a lot of folks who are here for not very long periods of time. Obviously, there are folks who live here their whole lives, but there are also folks who come and go, and making sort of the habit of voting, which is what it really is for many people, sometimes is pretty difficult. And so that can affect turnout in the sense, in the way that it kind of does in a college town, where people are there, are living there, but not necessarily sort of have the civic roots that they've set down that they might in other places.
I'm speaking with Derek Willis, news applications developer for ProPublica, and John Keefe, WMIC senior editor for Data News. They are among the team that worked on election land yesterday, and we'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. And we are back with WMIC's John Keefe and ProPolitico's Derek Willis talking about the election land program that took place yesterday. Derek, ProPublica reported on several cases of false information about voting requirements, including one by Urban Outfitters. What happened there?
So Urban Outfitters had put up a web page that basically encouraged people to go and vote, but they did so in a way that provided information that was misleading in many respects, particularly since they had said that voters would be required to have photo ID with them. And that's true in 7 states. That's not true in the majority of states. And so, you know, they, to their credit, when we pointed it out, they very quickly corrected it. And it's one of these things where, you know, people don't understand that we have 50 different state elections when we vote for president, and they're all operated under slightly different rules. And so what applies in one state may not apply in another. And so but when you put out information like that, you have the possibility that you can mislead people into saying this is what you need to vote. You have to have this to vote, when that may not be the case.
And Twitter removes some accounts. But what happens to individuals or groups who knowingly spread false information about voting? Is there any law against that, or is that protected speech?
So there certainly can be violations of law in those circumstances, and in particular if it's something that can be captured and or recorded. We've had cases of this. There have been cases in Maryland in 2010. When voters were sent, you know, called, got robocalls saying that the polls are already closed, so you don't need to go and vote. And so if there's evidence of this that investigators and prosecutors can see, then those can't be prosecuted because they are usually end up being violations of election law.
The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights reported an increase in complaints, and ElectionLand put out a call for people to report voting issues. What kinds of reports did you get?
Well, we saw those both sources of complaints and information. The Lawyers Committee worked with us to share their calls coming into them with ElectionLand, and we saw the texting. So we saw all sorts of concerns and complaints. From broken machines in New York to in California and across the country, there were cases of a lot of reports of just long lines, all the way down to balloting was not possible because they ran out of pens, or the pens ran out of ink in a couple of places. All sorts of different kinds of reports that we had. We also tracked problems with people who need special accommodations using a wheelchair or other accessibility issues. We were tracking those as well. A lot of complaints about those too. But as Derek was saying, what's interesting about this is that while we were able to track this and address it and pass them along to local reporters for further investigation, and the many, many stories were written yesterday, interestingly, it's not that atypical for a big presidential election. It's something that does pop up. We didn't see the kinds of organized disruptions at the polls that many, many has feared. On one hand, it wasn't that atypical. On the other hand, a lot of people clearly had trouble voting.
Let's take a call. Kelly from Washington Heights, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just on the conversation of the difference between voter turnout in New York and surrounding states, I just had an observation. When I went into my polling place around 7:30 yesterday morning, there were about 40 people, and I got in line, and my particular line, there were just a couple of people ahead of me. And when I got there, they said, oh, you need the N through Z line. And so I ended up having to get back in line and wait for the, you know, the other side. And I said, well, why don't you guys just put up a sign that indicates which side to stand in? And they said, well, we don't have anything to put up a sign with. We don't have signs. And then I mentioned that to an organizer on the way out as well, and she said the same thing, oh, we don't have signs. So that meant everyone had to wait in two different lines in order to get their ballot. And if a lot of polling places like that in the city are so inefficient, maybe people year after year think, oh, especially in an election where there's going to be a lot of people there, it's going to take forever to get out of there.
Couldn't they have just had somebody standing at the door asking what your last name was and say, okay, go to the line on the right as opposed to the line on the left?
Did have a table that directed you to the correct congressional district, right? Or, you know, whichever electoral district you're in. And so, but when you got there, then there were two lines for the different parts of the alphabet. So they actually needed someone there to tell you which line to stand in as well.
John,
they could have done that, I suppose.
John, yeah. And Derek, did you hear about similar situations?
We definitely did.
Yeah. Go ahead, Derek.
So yeah, we definitely did in terms of one of our colleagues at ProPublica, actually, when he went to vote in New York City yesterday morning, he went to one of the polling places where they didn't have the N through Z poll book available, and so he had to vote by affidavit ballot. And so, you know, a lot of this comes down to resources in terms of whether or not, you know, local governments have the resources to fund, you know, even small things like signs, but also recruiting poll workers. That can be a very, you know, it's a difficult task for in a lot of jurisdictions and a lot of places across the country to find people who are willing to sit and work for, you know, essentially a fairly small amount of money for 12 or 14 hours a day. And so it's a, you know, it's one of these issues where essentially you, if you put resources behind it, some of these things could probably be cleared up pretty quickly. But if you don't, then they get exposed and problems occur as a result.
Now that... I would just say that I had exactly that experience as the caller. I was in the wrong alphabet line. Fortunately, my line was just a couple of people long, so it didn't take very long at all. But what I think is really important to remember is that the poll workers, again, as Derek said, they're there for one day. And also, they are trying to juggle a whole bunch of rules. There are so many rules and laws governing how each poll site, at least I know of New York City because I've looked at this, how the poll sites are run, what signs are required, where they go, how what the protocol is. And they're trying to do their best to actually have that happen. Meanwhile, we're all in line going, hey, this would be a lot more efficient if you did it this way, but they're still trying to keep in mind all of those rules. So it is definitely, there's so many areas for just easy improvements, but I think it's hard when we only do this on occasion to actually pull that all off.
Now that this year's election is over, will the Election Land Project continue?
Well, we were just talking about that today, actually. We were having sort of a meeting about what's next. We are definitely going to be archiving all of the materials that we were working on yesterday. We're going to look over the data. There's still some counting and some reporting that's going on across the country, so there's still possible stories to come from this. And then we're looking at what, you know, how could this be used in future elections in the U.S. Maybe even the techniques we were using about looking at Google Trends and social media and SMS text, could that be used in other countries? We're not quite sure yet, but we're certainly open to the possibility.
Judging from how long this election campaign lasted, I suggest that you start working on the 2020 campaign next week.
Well, not only that, but we have, you know, midterm elections coming up in 2018, and heck, New Jersey elects a governor next year. So, I mean, there are almost always elections coming.
And what lasting effect do you think this election could have? Is it likely to bring any lasting changes to American politics?
Well, I mean,
I'm not talking about the result. I'm not asking you to predict a Trump presidency. I'm just talking about what we went through this time in voting.
Yeah, so I do think that there's the opportunity there because every time we vote, and particularly in the last, you know, 10 years or so, we learn a lot more about the electorate. We now know much more about the electorate and have more detail. It takes a couple of months to kind of pull all of that together, but we now know more about the electorate and what their voting experience is like. And so it's really... I mean, the potential is there. It's really a matter, frankly, of because their elections are run at the state and local level, of what state and local governments are, you know, willing to do and make a priority to do. But we certainly know more about how elections are run and how what voters' voting experiences are like. And so there's certainly an opportunity there if we want to take advantage of it.
Derek Willis, news application developer at ProPublica, and John Keefe, WNYC senior editor for Data News. Thank you both so much for being on our show today and clearing up all sorts of questions that I had.